All right, everyone, welcome back to part two of List 'Em and Learn, episode one. Alan, Justin, and I are going to be getting into the top 10 of our list of the top 20 U.S.-based workers of the past 12 years. Hope you guys enjoy it.
All right, so Alan, your number 11 is Edge. Who are your 10 and 9?
My 10 and 9 are, cracking the top 10, is Samoa Joe. And one ahead of him at 9 is the highlight of the night, Chris Jericho.
Very nice. All right, my 11, 10, 9. Some may be controversial. One in particular I think probably will be for how high I have him. Number 11, I have Nigel McGuinness. Number 10, I have Low Key.
Ooh.
And number 9 is CM Punk.
Did somebody say my name?
Way to step on my number 9. My number 9 is CM Punk.
Nobody cares about CM Punk. He's not a warrior.
Okay, fair enough.
I will fight him any day of the week.
And
low-key, if I could ask you a question about some of the real-life fights that you've had with
you
some
of the
people on this list.
You can, Justin. I respect you as a warrior, a podcast warrior.
No further questions.
I am here to fight. All right. Anyway, I'm going to guess, Justin.
I've completely thrown that off.
Yeah.
Sorry, Matt.
No problem.
And I'm here too. Wait, that's the wrong octave.
All right.
Sorry.
I'm going to guess, Justin, that you have plenty to say about Chris Jericho and CM Punk. Do you have much to say about Nigel McGuinness, Low Key, or Samoa Joe?
Joe goes into sort of the TNA narrative about people and the angle narrative about people whose careers more or less disappeared. The difference with him is, at least my perception is, his work also tailed off big time from where he was in the middle of that decade. Who was the other one? Oh, Caval, of course. Yeah. The thing about the two of them is, in the context of that NXT special that Alan brought up, where NXT has sort of become the hip indie fed of the internet du jour, it makes me lament that some of the people who have been in that system couldn't have been in it to at least have a cool NXT run. Like, it seems to me like Colt Cabana, as much as he is, like, annoyed, regretful, bitter, discouraged all of it about how his WWE run went, it must sting that much more that he missed out on a likely run as, like, the king of NXT for a few-month period, where he would have had his shtick there, the full Sailors would have gone bananas for it.
Going back even further, Paul London.
He
came into WWE. Paul London and Spanky, when they came into WWE in, like, 2003, like, they were almost plucked from the indies before they got their indie run. It was, like, right when they were, like, I think they signed Spanky in, like, October 2002 and London maybe spring 2003, barely a year into Ring of Honor. It's those guys really, their timing was way off.
I mean, especially when you look at, you know, like, just the long arc of history, what's happened to other guys who didn't rush, or I'm not saying they rushed, but didn't get that opportunity that early.
Oh, I'm sure, like, anyone else, like, if Bryan Danielson was given the job then, I'm sure he would have gone at that point, but yeah. Yeah.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, it's an interesting point in history. I can't guarantee you that Kevin Steen, Prince Devitt, and Kento will, let alone ultimately show up there.
Who?
To say nothing.
Bravo.
I missed it. They show up, let alone succeed in WWE, considering Matt was just talking about Chris Hero. But it's clearly a different world that they can even be, like, under consideration. Things can happen to where everyone's not a slam dunk, whether you're Rick O'Shea, the great Irish wrestler, or, great one. Who did he just pass on last year? The American Wolves. So it's not like the new utopia of where these guys go, but it's definitely a brave new world. And so I wonder you know, how things, who you could plug into this territory. Someone needs to do, I hope one day, guest booker NXT of 2012, 2013, 2014.
I think I'd be the only one, but I'm as excited about Willie Mack signing as any of the other three guys.
Well, it's a period where the two people Triple H talks about as being the best guys in NXT are Sami Zayn and Adrian Neville. So it's very bizarre.
Justin, I assume you've never seen Willie Mack, right?
I've seen a picture of him.
Oh, let me just tell you, this guy, he's something. He could be something if they let him be. He is. Do you know he's a juggalo?
Oh,
he is. He's a self-respecting, proud juggalo, Willie Mack. But that's irrelevant to the point. He is extremely unique wrestler, extremely charismatic, and goddamn, if he gets a chance down there, he could really he could make a mark.
So you might say, Alan, that you don't need to believe in miracles to think that Willie Mack might have a successful WWE career.
No.
It was a Insane Clown Posse joke. Never mind.
That brings me to number 9 on my list.
I am not a juggalo.
Okay.
And I never will.
Do you either of you
I
have...
I don't really know what it entails.
Does Shaggy 2 Dope occur on either of your lists based on his matches with Vampiro, his matches with Golga? Granted, a little bit out of the time frame.
If this was like the 1999 list, I think Violent J might show up on the list, but not Shaggy 2 Dope.
I'd actually have two spots for Shaggy 2 Dope on the list. He was that good.
Number two?
He was that dope, is what you're trying to say.
Is that now you're 4L? Do you think you're twice as dope as Shaggy 2 Dope?
That's simple mathematics, Justin. I think that gives you the answer.
Is it true that Willie Mack is an amalgam of Mean Street Posse members Willie Green and Rodney Mack? Is not that guy? Never mind.
What?
I was thinking of a different.
Who's
Rodney
Willie Mack. Green?
Matt,
related to Kev Green?
Willie Green.
Did I just call Kevin Green Kev Green? Like, what was that? I didn't even mean to. Back in the day when me and Flair and Big Kev Green and Piper, we used to hang, and it was awesome. We were up all night. It was ladies, watch out.
With Rhonda Shear?
Oh yeah.
Up all night.
She hung out with Michaels, right?
Yes, she did.
Yeah, I remember. I remember her picture in a WWF magazine back when I was a very young youth, and I was quite quite taken aback by this woman.
Willie Green was God. What a completely stupid thing to bring up. Willie Green was in the Mean Street Posse vignettes when there were more than the first two, and I think Willie Green had his body silhouetted in his voice.
Yes, I remember this. Because they would talk about him, and then finally he showed up. Yeah.
Yes, and I think people thought it was going to be Joey Abs, who ended up showing up later as Joey Abs.
But so there was a character in WF called Willie Green.
Barely. He was as big as, like, Key the Pusher, who showed up with draws once.
I've actually never heard any mention of Willie Green, nor it's
there. He never wrestled, he never appeared in an arena, but he was in the first Mean Street Posse vignettes when they talked about how tough Shane was.
Was he a different worker? Did he have a different name that he went by as a wrestler? Like, you know, Joey Abs was Jason Arndt?
No, I think he was, I don't think anyone even knows who he was.
He could have been like Reckless Youth or someone eventually, but when they finally came to TV, it was only Rodney, not Mac, and Pete, Gas,
Pete Gas looks like Cole Cabana. I've always thought that.
That's true.
It's kind of a Cole Cabana, well, Jack Swagger hybrid.
Dream team. Matt, I'm sorry.
It's okay. So wait, okay, so you cause so
this is all about Loki and Samoan Joe.
Yeah, if you have anything to say about those guys. But I think you said a lot. If you have nothing more to say, I would like to know your thoughts on one Chris Jericho and one CM Punk.
That's a lot too.
Yes.
I'm shocked you have Punk this low.
I'm shocked you have Jericho this low.
Jericho, which order did you have him in, Matt?
Okay, so I had Jericho at number 9 and Alan had, I mean, I had Punk at number 9 and Alan had Jericho at number 9.
It'll be interesting to see if you have Punk where you have Jericho where I have Punk and I have Punk where you have Jericho.
It will be.
Mm. Let's see here. For my WWE list, I had Jericho number 4. Ahead of Edge, ahead of Punk, ahead of Benuero. Because the time frame also comes into play with him. He of all of the New Japan / ECW / WCW crew who all came to WWF and ended up forming the heart of their upper mid card for half the decade or more, I think he acclimated the most to WWF, to the point where, like, Benoit and Eddie in WCW had so many just great wrestling matches, whether they were on TV or pay-per-views. Jericho hit the lion's share, no PI, came in WWF, him as a great worker. And I think the story's there in his book, too, of he's the one who really, for all the cliches of WWF style and polish and learning how to work, he is the one who had benefited the most. Because even before he became his No Country for Midlife Crisis Man character in 2008, the Jericho of 02 and 03, who I think Alan ironically referred to as his long-forgotten highlight of the night nickname, became such a great all-around performer at that time, who was, when Triple H was so boring as the champion on Raw in 2003, every time he would have a shitty match with someone, Jericho would wrestle the guy shortly after that and have a much better match, whether it was Goldberg, Nash even, and who's the, oh, Scott Steiner, all of them. And it was
that's a really good point and something I've never thought about before, but that's the most definitely true.
Yeah, he was outshining them, and he was sort of became a real glue guy who was divorced from all his pals on SmackDown who were having great matches, but he was doing it in different ways. And this is even before we talk about the 08-09 Jericho, who, much like Edge the 2 years before that, was probably the MVP / best all-around guy type of dude. Thank you and God bless.
For me, I don't consider 9 low for Jericho. I don't consider it. Top 10 for any of these guys, I think, is a real, I think that's really saying that I really thought they were incredible, and I suppose that does go without saying. But yeah, it's just when you say I have them too low, I feel like I almost need to take the approach of criticizing aspects of them, but like I'm all it's I can only really talk about the reasons why I feel he's great, and why I have him in my mind quite high. And that would be, yeah, like Justin said, he acclimated to the WWE style, maybe not instantly, but very, very well once he did. And he was Mr. Durable. He was always around, and whether he was a pushed act or whether he kind of had fallen back down in the card and was kind of treading water a little bit, he was really, really good. When he came back from his first kind of, I guess it was a pretty much a 2 year break, 2005 to 2007, mm-hmm. when he came back from that and he did the stuff with Shawn, it was in ring, I thought, really very, very strong stuff. But I think the highlight, like that, to me, that storyline was as much about the outside the ring as the in ring. And for me, in ring, the highlight of his WWF tenure and maybe his whole career was the Rey Mysterio Jr. feud in 2009, I want to say.
It was 9.
I think that is one of the best in-ring feuds ever in WWF.
I would agree.
I think it built from match to match. I think it had aspects of wrestling that you don't usually see in WWE in terms of like the mask attacks, and I think it made more use out of Rey's lucha heritage than anything else he ever did in WWF.
It was the kind of feud that you don't get to see because it was two guys who were athletically really good but had also had years and years and years of experience being like among the elite wrestlers. And like all that knowledge and all that talent put together in a way that WWE doesn't often let you have. And they were guys who's, you know, Rey Mysterio has been, you know, broken down to varying degrees for years and years, but he still was spry enough. And Chris Jericho, like athletically, was still in, you know, really good shape for someone who had been wrestling as long as he was. And they kind of had it all at that point. So they were really able to make, I don't know, maybe not even the most out of it, but something close to the most out of everything they had together.
And I swears to gods, it must have been the first time they worked together since, like, Bash at the Beach 1998. They were always divorced on different
that's
brands.
That's a good point.
So they finally, after working with all their contemporaries over and over and over again, finally found each other, and it was beautiful.
So where are we at? I'm kind of losing track.
All right, on my list,
we've gone through to
number nine. Both lists, we've gone to number nine. The other part that I had, and we still really haven't talked much about Samoa Joe, but I'll talk about him in a second because I have him on my next batch. But my number nine is CM Punk, and I want Justin's thoughts on him. And I would, as far as Punk, I would echo what you said, which is you were surprised I had
that low. And same deal.
You know, it's like, yeah, I mean, to me, it's really high. And, like, Punk is great. And, you know, like, he's kind of like – there are things that are similar to Cena in terms of, like, things he's criticized for. You know what I mean? But he's really, I think, in the past few years put it all together to where, like, any, like, athletic shortcomings, you really don't notice them almost at all anymore, or you didn't up until his, I guess, possible retirement a few months ago. And, you know, his body, I guess, is sort of caught up with his mind because he's always had the mind of like an all time great worker. And, you know, he was able to put on all time great matches even when he wasn't the crispest. And now, or like, you know, recently, I think he's kind of been able to, his execution has improved to the degree where he really was one of the best in the world. Or maybe, you know, like, you know, definitely I'd say one of the best in the whole world for a few years there. And, you know, I don't think number nine is any kind of slight. I think last year he had a run. And if we're talking about Dave Meltzer star ratings, he had a run where he did have like four and a half star matches in a row based on Meltzer's ratings and a couple other 4-star matches. And, you know, you don't see that very often from anyone. And, you know, people, I think even to this day, people kind of sleep on how good in the ring CM Punk is and how many great matches he's had. And he's had as many great matches as almost anyone in America in the past 12 years. You know, even going back to the IWA days. I mean, Alan, when was the last time you watched the ladder match he had against Chris Hero in IWA?
I don't know if I ever watched it in full. I think I've only ever seen clips of that.
I watched it maybe in like 07. It's shockingly good considering their level of experience and all that, and the fact that, you know, it wasn't a match that like Meltzer ever really reviewed. It was, you know, IWA. You know, IWA got a lot of press, but still, nowhere near the amount of eyeballs that ROH got. And it's, you know, it's up there with some of the best matches of that year in ROH. And, you know, and that was 12 years ago. And, you know, all these years later, CM Punk just kept improving that whole time. And
remember, in Ring of Honor, he had the run of matches with Roderick Strong that was incredible when he was the heel champ. And
Samoa Joe. I mean, obviously, those matches with him and Joe are like still among the best matches in ROH history. And still, you know, the Punk versus Joe too, still one of the few matches that got 5 stars in the Observer in the U.S. in the past 15 years, 17 years. You know, very few matches got that. And that did. And that
and
was
the first
back...
and the third both got 4¾, right?
I think the first one got 4¼. I think both got 4¼, actually, looking back.
The third one got 4¼?
Yeah.
I think the third one's the best of the three, or at least I did then. I haven't watched them in years.
I mean, yeah, listen, I agree that match should be rated higher. But, you know, again, you know, just, you know, it's hard to quibble about quarter.
He was hungry that day.
Yeah, exactly. but, you know,
he had a really
nice
steak before the Chicago match.
Yeah, notwithstanding, he also had those brawls. You know, the brawls with the with the prophecy.
Chicago Street Fight, Punk
yeah.
and Punk and Ace Steel against Moth and Whitmer. Amazing.
Yeah. Amazing match. He had a 90-minute 2 out of 3 falls match with Chris Hero in 2003, which to me was also really holds up shockingly well. I mean, very few of the best wrestlers in the world can do a really good 90-minute match, and those two indie guys in 2003 did it and were able to hold everyone's attention and hold my attention on TV years later. It's pretty impressive. And you know, I mean, in WWE you can, you know, you could just rattle off all the great matches Punk has had, especially since he became a main eventer. And, you know, really 2009, I'd say, was the period where he started being able to have these great matches. And he just kept having them until he left.
He had really good matches at Ray.
Yep.
Really good. And he had not as good as the Jericho ones, but not far off. He had a really good, like, 7-minute match at Regal, the final of the King of the Ring. Like, seriously, a great match.
He won the Intercontinental title from him in Chicago.
Yeah. That was really good, too. And he had, even before the Ray feud, he had an Intercontinental title match with Ray when they were both babyfaces that was phenomenal. I think that was on the December pay-per-view, I want to say.
That was the match he won to get the title shot against Regal in Chicago.
Was that not for the title?
I think it was like Regal had an illness or something and couldn't work for a month, so they did the title shot match instead.
What was the? There was another thing he did. Oh, the Jeff Hardy matches were very, very good.
He had essentially the only good JBL matches of JBL's last run.
I don't really remember them, to be honest.
Yeah, I don't think I saw those, but I believe it.
Oh, a SummerSlam world title match. Would you believe that? Between CM Punk and JBL, it was like fifth from the top.
He wrestled Batista on the pay-per-view before that, right after the. What was the screw job finish in that? Because I know they didn't put him over Batista clean at that point because he was not really getting pushed as a main event dude when he won the title the first time.
I think the Demon Kane ran in.
Okay.
It's always the Demon Kane.
That was Is He Alive or Is He Dead, Kane?
He was alive.
So,
can't wait until I'm doing my 08-09 Nostalgia Raw podcast with Joe Gagne. Oh, I did those with you, though, remember? It was like the first stuff we did was the Decade in Review. But we probably didn't talk too much about those years because they were so recent at the time.
Yeah.
Boy, Alan, we're veterans.
Joe, I suppose we have to talk about it a little bit.
But before that, let me ask you, Nigel and Loki, are they on your list, Alan?
No, they're not. Nigel's an honorable mention. Loki can get stuffed. And... I loved Loki when he came onto the scene in 2002, and I thought he was really great when he was in Ring of Honor, but he kept leaving, and yeah, that kind of screws things up. And when he'd leave, he wouldn't really go much elsewhere to do anything. When he'd show up in PWG, he would like kind of. He had a couple of good things he did in PWG, but overall it was, it's kind of frustrating. Loki won't lose to anyone and kind of doesn't really... Then he kind of got into the thing of actually not only would he not lose to guys, but he would kind of eat guys up in matches. And while he looked really good in matches and he certainly could appreciate his talents, it didn't make for... Like, I think that's a huge criticism to put at someone when they're... Or a huge flaw in someone when they're making another guy look worse than he should. TNA, he did some good stuff. But, like, yeah, just Loki was too much. He went away and didn't do anything and burnt bridges and wasted talent. And I don't think what he did when he was around, I think he's a similar case study to Lesnar, maybe, in terms of sort of quality over quantity. And I just don't think the stuff he did when he was around negates kind of the what he missed in the way that Lesnar stuff does, for me anyway.
Are you including the runs of Senshi and Caval, which all for whatever reason end the same way?
I mean, certainly I'm including them. I mean, they're not like the things that decide it, but I'm including them. Let me talk about Nigel real quick because he's the less controversial of the two, I'd say. And part of it, the reason I have Nigel so high is because I was there for, like, so much of Nigel's peak. You know, like, literally there, like, seeing the matches live, and it was just one great match after another, and the crowd got so into him. And like when he started to lose the crowd, he turned heel, and it was brilliant, as we talked about on the podcast we did together about ROH in 2007. But also the fact that, you know, he did it like two different styles. Like, because I remember the first time I saw Nigel McGuinness live, Justin was with me, and it was at an ROH show, like the weekend of the first ECW One Night Stand. And it was at this small place in NYC that they never ran again called the Supper Club. And he wrestled Samoa Joe in a pure title match. And in a lot of ways, he was like the standout guy live, because that was the first ROH show I ever went to. And I think Justin agreed. Like, he stood out a lot as far as like the way he was able to weave his persona in, you know, doing different heel tactics, like kind of like working within the pure title rules. And he ended up going on to have a great pure title reign. And like at that point, he was just doing kind of like the sneaky British finesse guy. And like he was doing a great job with that. And then suddenly he became a main eventer, and he did this like hard hitting style with the lariats and stuff. And, you know, and it seems like it shouldn't work in the sense that it was very repetitive, but he somehow always managed to make it work. And his matches with Danielson were, well, across the board, awesome. His matches with Aries were great. His matches with Morishima were really good. He had great matches with Tyler Black. He just had so many great matches that I was there for. And like, he was just one after another, after another, after another. And obviously he killed himself, like not literally, but like killed his body doing those things. But he was just too good. He was just too good for me not to have him, you know, like at least in my top 15. And just being there for him doing all that, I don't know. I just, in my gut, I just felt like he's number 11. He's ahead of some of these other guys.
He even had at least one match with Kurt Angle, right?
Yeah, that's right. He had good matches with him too.
Really good matches. Honestly, this is the best example on the show so far of a pitch being made for someone making me rethink them. I feel probably I've shortchanged Nigel by not having him on here. You raise a lot of inarguable points, Matt, and I think if I was to revise my list, I would have him on there in like the Shelley Lesnar kind of slot. Right. I don't think I'd put him ahead of Seth, but possibly the tail end of my list. Like, I think Nigel would be probably deserving. But I did have him on as an honorable mention, along with Austin Aries, Jeff Hardy, and The Undertaker, for the record.
I have a question about that show we went to in June,
mm-hmm.
9 years ago.
Yep.
So on that show, didn't Low Key beat ROH champion Austin Aries clean?
In a non-title match, yeah.
Right. Now, was that playing off Loki's reputation, or was that
reputation? That was one of the things that earned Loki's reputation.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Just curious.
Yep. Now, as far as Loki, I understand why this is controversial. I'm sure this is probably, besides Cesaro being so low and Loki being so high, are probably the two things I'm going to get killed for the most. And especially, I would say, Loki being so much higher than AJ Styles, who's a guy that I could say was probably... you know, in some ways, probably his strengths are similar in that they both had.
I think like every good thing that Loki did in that 2002-2003 period, which I think we'd agree was his probably his strongest. I think AJ matched him, or at least in my mind, surpassed him during that time.
Yeah, see, that's the one thing I don't agree with. I mean, I definitely agree that they did similarly good things. Like their strengths are very similar. Their weaknesses are similar. Loki's weaknesses are arguably much worse in that he basically couldn't really have a career because of like some of the things that he did. But I think that, I mean, if you listen to the early like indie good old days with Rob Naylor and I, we kind of talk about it. Loki was like the man, and AJ really wasn't. I mean, Loki was the guy who was setting the tone for that whole scene. You know, him and, you know, probably Danielson to a degree. But it was really low-key. Like, he was the guy that kind of, like, sparked a whole era of indie wrestling. And if you watch those early ROH shows, low-key was stealing the show, you know, every single month. And then in TNA, he was stealing the show a lot. Then he had some great matches in TNA. And then he even had, like, a really good second run in ROH, just kind of like the gangsta low-key, which I think I like a lot more than other people like. I thought like his style at that time was really cool. I thought the way he presented himself was really cool, kind of a different change of pace. and in some ways he even played off of his reputation during that period. I wish he could have stuck around longer, but I just think, like, I don't know, it just felt to me like what he was doing, I don't know, maybe revolutionary wasn't the right word, but it was influential enough to put him a few pegs higher than an AJ, even if AJ had better longevity and maybe even, you know, well, probably definitely more great matches because of that longevity. I just think what Loki was doing was so important. And I still think even after he, like, his career died down, I think he still stayed really good on those times when, like, he decided to show up, you know, and, like, what he did in WWE was a lot better than what you might think, given, like, how low profile it was. I mean, he had some really good matches in WWE given very few opportunities to do so. I'm trying to think, I think it was Survivor Series 2010. He had a really good match. I forget who he wrestled. Maybe it was
Ziggler. He had a good pay-per-view match. It was when we kicked him really hard in the face.
Yeah. Ziggler was a really good match. I mean, and like, you think now, like, Ziggler versus Loki, like, kind of match a lot of people would want to see. And they actually got to do it. And I don't know. I really can't. I guess I can't make a strong case for Loki, which is why I know I'm going to get killed for it. But it just felt it just feels to me like his work at his peak was something special. Like, it wasn't just good, but it was also important. And
To get into real ephemera of this list, I think there's even a long Caval versus Jack Swagger, Soaring Eagle era Swagger on Superstars that was really good.
I believe it.
I mean, very good. Very good, according to the Dave adjective.
Not super.
Yep.
So, I mean, I think that's all I can really say about Loki. I'm sure I didn't convince anyone, but that was how I felt about Loki. What can I say?
Certainly, Lay Cool was a big fan.
Yes. They were.
And he did a rap where he said the words total nonstop action on NXT.
He did.
Thus ends my contributions on Loki.
Okay, will I go 876?
Yep, go ahead.
Hey, why was Shevin afraid of... Wait, yeah. Damn it! Oh,
Oh, I forgot to say anything really about Samoa Joe, but we've kind of brought him up a few times in talking about other people. But yeah, Samoa Joe, just for me... We've both had Samoa Joe right by now, haven't we?
Samoa Joe is number 8 for me.
Oh, is he? Okay, well then this is an opportunity to talk about him. But I'll list my 876 first, I suppose. Okay. 8, I have Shawn Michaels. 7, I have, mentioned earlier, Cesaro. And 6, I have... Rey Mysterio.
Wow. So this
murmur.
Getting interesting.
Did you hear what he had?
All right. Well, we'll talk about that. I think probably we should start with Samoa Joe since well, actually, let me give my list. Number 8 is Joe. Number 7, Kurt Angle, who we've talked about, and as I mentioned, I had him much higher. We don't have to talk about him again. And number 6, drum roll please, Sami Zayn.
Oh.
So,
I am curious of your top 3 now.
Yeah.
I am deadly curious. Jack Swagger is going to be way better than I expected.
Well, remember Alan, just because you mentioned someone already doesn't mean I have. So think about that.
I've been trying to track that in my head, but maybe I've missed something, but yeah, it's very possible.
All right.
Joe for me, the things you were saying about Loki as far as being the man, that's what I thought of Joe as in ROH during its first 3 years, really until the Danielson 2006 title reign. For me, Joe was the man. Like, he lost the title at the end of 04, but I think true 2005 with the Kobashi match, I think Aries may have had the belt and was a good champion. Joe was still the man. He was really unique in terms of his style and being this heavy guy, but an athletic heavy guy, rewriting the rule books as far as a heavy guy in wrestling. It was something that was really, a lot of people were drawn to. He was a real innovator in terms of that hard-hitting style. His matches, starting right out of the gate with the low-key match at Glory Bound 2002, his title run in 2003, where he'd wrestled like AJ and Daniels and all these other guys who he'd get the best out of, and they'd get the best out of him. And it was the Jay Briscoe cage match. My God, this whole feud with the Briscoes, where it was just this great dynamic of this big, strong, authoritarian champion and these two kids who just kind of kept getting up in his face, and they were just like hungry young lions just trying to go at the big dog, or the big lion, I guess would fit the analogy better. he was great in that role. He knew how to be he was like a face, but he was everyone loved him, but he was the aggressor in a lot of his matches. He was the dominant guy, like in playing the role a heel would be, but he was still beloved. So much charisma, like sort of subtle charisma in a lot of ways, but it just was oozing from him. Again, the great matches continued all the way through 05, 06, and into 07 when he eventually left ROH. And I think his initial he started in TNA in 05, and I think a lot of people forget like his when he started in TNA just how good some of those matches were with. I think he had was Chris Sabin on, I think, maybe the second pay-per-view. Delirious, I think, was his first pay-per-view opponent. I could have that wrong, but it was some mask guy he wrestled on his first pay-per-view. Then Chris Sabin. Then I think it might have been AJ on the next one. He wrestled Liger in there somewhere. He was phenomenal. But 2007, he was still kind of, he left ROH, he's still kind of doing some good things in TNA with Kurt Angle and stuff, but the booking started to kill him at that point. And then 2008 through to now, it's been a lot of disappointing years for Samoa Joe. He'd have the occasional flash, like there was a match with Aries, I think about 2 years ago. I was on the same show that AJ and Kurt had a great tag match against Daniels and Kazarian. Joe and Aries tore it up on that show. And Joe actually had an amazing match that I saw a fan cam of with Willie Mack on some California indie last year. Freaking amazing. I put it up on YouTube or I put it up on Twitter, like the YouTube link, and said to people like to watch it, because I don't know how this match wasn't getting more hype because it was so good. But people should check out that. So there's just still, like, deep down, that old Samoa Joe is still in there and can be drawn out, but I think he's been so beaten down by the run in TNA and the booking, but as well, like, his style obviously took a toll on him, and it'd be tough for him to ever kind of keep up that style at any regular kind of pace nowadays. But yeah, Samoa Joe is tremendous, and that run was so good for me that it definitely gets him middle of the top 20 spot.
Yeah, I mean, Joe, another great thing about Joe in his ROH title reign was that, like, he really played this, like, old school NWA champion role that you really hadn't seen in years. Like, in that, like, he wasn't a heel, but he also wasn't totally a face. And, like, he kind of had a chip on his shoulder. And it added such an aura to his matches that you didn't really get. And I think it kind of set the mold for ROH championship reigns till, you know, even today. And, you know, he had these hour-long matches. He really kind of popularized them again, even though other people were doing them on the indies. And, you know, ROH kept doing them for years after that. And, like, they were good, which made it special, you know, because before those matches, you know, he was the kind of hard-hitting, strong style, but with a mix of modern submissions. And he kind of worked in this like old school wrestling style into it. Then he goes to TNA and he works a totally different style, you know, kind of goes back to that hard hitting thing with adding a lot more of the flying aspect to it, a little bit of a quicker pace. And I think Samoa Joe doesn't get enough credit in that TNA before Samoa Joe came, you know, it was getting a lot of buzz and had a lot of great wrestlers, but Samoa Joe coming in June of 2005 really changed the perception of TNA for a few months. It really made it kind of the promotion to watch. And those pay-per-views, I think he really put them over the top as being these must-see shows.
you know, when he was added to that mix with the Sabins and the Styles and Daniels and all
those
guys.
He had a really good match with Scott Steiner on a TNA pay-per-view. I just remembered.
Yeah,
I think early 2006.
He did, and when Kurt Angle came, you know, who was the guy that everyone wanted to see him wrestle? You know, it wasn't AJ. I mean, it was Samoa Joe. It's a big thing. Samoa Joe won Most Outstanding Wrestler in the Observer, I'm pretty sure, in 2005. And, you know, a lot of guys on this list didn't ever do that. And, you know, he was probably considered the best worker in the whole country in maybe I'd say definitely 05, maybe even part of 04 too, maybe even part of 06. And, you know, that match with Kenny Kobashi, you really don't get those kinds of matches in the United States. And Samoa Joe was the one guy who was able to do it. And,
do you know what the most amazing thing is? Is like what could have arguably been his best match during the whole period never happened, and it probably could have happened. That being him versus Kenta in ROH. And the reason it was never done was, I believe, because they were just too worried that these two guys would just actually kill each other too much and they couldn't put them in the ring with each other. It would be too stiff.
It's amazing to think of that. And, you know, he never had that rematch with Loki when they were still kind of close enough to their primes.
Yeah, I think that was a Loki, another Loki deal. That was not one where they didn't want to, where it wasn't. That was one where they would have done it if they could, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, I mean, so, you know, there's certainly a lot of missed opportunities there, but even without them, you know, even taking those into account, like, you don't, Joe had a pretty remarkable run. And, you know, I still don't think that he's done. Like, I still think he's going to have some great stuff left in his career. You know, certainly TNA has taken a lot out of a lot of guys who are stuck there.
I would love for him to leave TNA. Like, yeah, Daniel Kazarian left, and that's and there in ROH now. People are excited about that, and I don't want to rain on that parade. But to me, I would be a lot more excited if it was Samoa Joe coming back to Ring of Honor.
Yeah, I mean, even so, honestly, even at this point, Samoa Joe coming to WWE with all the things that you think could work against him, I would like to see it. You know, I think, you know, I just think that there's just something, something that
Samoa Joe versus Brock Lesnar.
Yeah, I mean, listen. I mean, what is
Samoa Joe versus Tyler Breeze
versus Adam Rose? No, but you know, so I mean, there's really not much more to say about Joe. Justin, go ahead.
Do you remember taking the time machine back to that pivotal month we were talking about, June of 05, the TNA TV list pay per views, and a time of WWE like distaste that led to like all the fan acclaim for Ring of Honor and all that. So TNA is about to go on Spike TV. Do you guys remember the story where Vince McMahon told John Laurinaitis to sign CM Punk, Samoa Joe, and Bryan Danielson?
I remember vaguely that they were looking at those guys.
I remember the whole Punk Joe thing through Mick Foley.
Yes. Yep. So in hindsight, seems like a pretty pivotal stretch in history as far as where all three guys went, because for those first 2 years, or three, or four, or the whole time, there was, as part of the internet's obsession, love-hatery with CM Punk, it was like, LOL CM Punk, you could have been a champion like Samoa Joe, and look at ya, why didn't you go to TNA? Or return to TNA, I guess. And then, surely, if Danielson had come then, I don't know if he would have been that much different in the mix than, like, your Jamie Nobles and your London Kendrick guys.
The one thing about Joe's choice, though, that I just can't go, well, he clearly made the wrong choice, is he did get quite a few good contracts from TNA. He earned money in TNA, and he probably earned a lot more money than he would have if things went badly in WWE, because I think like whatever initial like developmental contract or whatever he would have gotten would pale in comparison to some of the contracts I'm sure he got in TNA. And the other thing is the workload for that money in TNA was a lot less than it would have been in WWE. And I think for his body type and the way he wrestled, having the lower workload may have helped him quite a bit creatively and artistically. Certainly, I think the WWE run's potential could have worked out a lot better, but also there's a risk that it might not have worked out at all. So I think he kind of took the safe option, and I hope he saved up his money, and it seems like a guy who's living comfortably enough financially. So,
The story that Samoa Joe would have been Umaga, I think, is a metaphor that gets repeated as fact. I don't think that was ever the case. Now we can't do Umaga. But I think it does show that there was a path to success for him, maybe, considering like Snitsky and such were being given chances as monster heels. But this was also the same time frame when Morishima did his tryout and showed up disrespecting the company by being fat. So, yeah, there was going to be a lot of stuff that worked against him.
All right. I already talked about Cesaro. What do you want to say about Cesaro, Alan?
Just that he combines a great run now in WWE with what I consider a great run on the indies, both as a tag in King's Wrestling. I mentioned the 2010 run, which I think is one of the best tag runs of this whole time period. I really liked him in Chikara. I really liked some stuff he did in random other indies like CZW and IWA Mid-South. He was just a really fun wrestler, even when he was green and learning, like even when he was like learning a lot about wrestling and improving, and he was still like a fun guy to watch, even though he wasn't super polished, because like he'd be there watching freaking Toriumon tapes or Lucha tapes of Chris Hero, and then you'd have these 6'5" guys out and go out there and do all that stuff, and they did it well, and it was like, okay, maybe they weren't polished, super polished as workers, but while they were getting that polish, they were still putting on really entertaining matches for people to see. Maybe if you go back and watch them under the eyes of like what you see Cesaro as now, you'd think, oh Jesus, he certainly was way off what he's become then. But like watching it then, he was a really fun guy on the scene. I think his run in PWG at the same time that he was tagging it with Hero, as King's Wrestling version 2 in Ring of Honor, so sort of 2010, 2011, really right up until he signed with WWE, he was amazing in PWG, just as this absolute monster, throwing guys around. He got all this new aggression. He was fantastic. Really, the only time I wasn't really into him was when he turned heel there in Ring of Honor. You mentioned that four-way with Tyler and Danielson and Nigel and him. And him and Danielson got eliminated when Claudio just destroyed Danielson with a chair. And that was cool, but kind of the months that followed that, he was supposed to be this really aggressive monster dude as a heel, but he couldn't really muster up that aggression. And he didn't really until... it was really around the time that when he completely shaved his head, he was wearing short trunks instead of long trunks. That's kind of how I visualized the kind of, I'm sure that has nothing to do with it, but like that's where I visualized kind of one Claudio ended and a new one emerged. And he was great up until he left the indies. He had some really good stuff that he did in developmental. And yeah, I enjoyed everything he's done on the main roster. So he has been since 2004, really, he's been a player. For the last, seven of those years, he's been a top player. So yeah, comfortably in this spot on my list. I had him in the top 10 the whole way through thinking about this. There was never a consideration for him outside the top 10 for me.
Yeah, and like I said, at this point, in my opinion, argument can be made that he's the best in the whole world. So
Did I make the pitch to make you reconsider like you did with Nigel?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I reconsidered, you know, even as I was making the list. I mean, it's just a matter of who do I put him ahead of. You know, like that's sort of the tough part for me. Justin, Cesaro?
Cesaro is I love him, of course. I thought one of the telltale things Triple H said on that conference call was him saying to Cesaro, "Oh, you need to work like you do here when you're on the main roster on the road, which combined with some, I think it was The Torch who said when Cesaro's big push started in February, it was because people in the company really got behind him because he was given advice and he took it to heart and they believed him to be flourishing. So that combined with John Cena's love affair with Cesaro, clearly he's doing all the right things, performing in all the right ways that has sort of let him skip past the frustration period that Punk fans and Daniel Bryan fans had to go through. Although, you know, there were those short circuitings of his first push last year when what happened? He lost to Kofi and sort of went into obscurity until he found patriotism, and then that began him anew.
Remember when he was with Oksana? There's something we don't really think of it.
That's a very good point. Yep. You would think
he was a rugby player.
Shout out to two of our mutual friend Albert Ching, who pointed out during the Rhodes Brothers versus Real Americans feud, he did not understand why Oksana didn't play a more prominent role considering her history with both Cesaro and her ex-husband Goldust. So, great point from a great man. Yeah, and for all the dissatisfaction people, and maybe it's a small segment of people, have about him not, like, conquering the world after what happened WrestleMania weekend, I think what I remind myself is in WWE, it's more your positioning than the booking, because the booking is almost never going to be satisfying, but the positioning tells the whole story, and he's clearly being positioned for important and consequential things.
All right, who do we have left? So I have not yet talked about, because we already talked about Angle, we already talked about, I guess there's Michaels, and then there's Sami Zayn. All right, so I have Michaels in my, you know, coming up next, actually. So let's just hold off on him for a second. But Rey Mysterio I have coming up. Sami Zayn.
Coming up after the
coming
break.
Coming up too. So you know what? These guys, since they're all very high on our list, let's talk about them as we get.
I don't know if Sami Zayn coming up for a while, buddy.
So let's talk about them when they
Stone Cold.
So before we do our top five, a couple things I want to do. First of all, Justin, give me your bottom five of your WWE list.
Let me look, because I jotted down a cursory list and then I typed in some little things that have muddied the waters. Let's see here. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. My 11 to 6 went Cena, Christian, because this is a WWE exclusive list, Brock Lesnar, Eddie Guerrero, Punk, Edge, Benoit.
Okay, so that is excluding your top five. All right, now, Alan, give me your honor.
Oops, that was 7. 7 out of 11. So that includes my top four.
Okay. So, Alan, give me your honorable mentions.
They were Aries, Nigel, Hardy, and Undertaker.
Which Hardy?
Jeff. Ree.
All right. And for me, my honorable mentions were at 25, I had Davey Richards. At 24, I had Christian. At 23, I had Jay Briscoe. At 22, I had Homicide. And at 21, I had The Undertaker. So that leaves us with our number fives. I already said that mine is Shawn Michaels. Who is your number five, Alan?
Where did I have it? My number five was AJ Styles.
AJ Styles. All right. So I'd say it's a good time to talk about Shawn Michaels. He was your number eight. He's my number five. His entire second run is encompassed by this time period. And I thought his second run, you know, criticisms that other people might have, I genuinely didn't have many of those. Like, I don't share those.
I don't either.
Yeah, I saw him as just having great match after great match when he was asked to. And for his age, with his injuries, what else could you really ask for? He had great matches on pay-per-views. He had great matches on TV with a lot of different opponents, you know, whether it be Shelton Benjamin or Chris Benoit or whoever. You know, he had, you know, long matches. He had short matches. He had brawls. He had technical matches. WrestleMania, obviously, like, you know, carried Vince McMahon to a great match. Could be counted not to have a great match. Every single one since he came back, he had a great match. Every single one. His match with Hulk Hogan was a hilarious spectacle. And he,
you know, I wish that he could have had that heel run that he teased with that Hogan feud, because it was great. But Shawn Michaels, I think he's as good as they say. You know, I think, you know, you add in his whole career, he's, you know, he's among the best. And his this second chapter of his career was as good as the first chapter in a lot of ways. Alan, what do you think about Shawn Michaels?
There were some low points, like the DX reunion.
Oh, yeah,
where
no doubt.
Wasn't really used to his fullest, and where he kind of, there was kind of a stretch where you might not have the great Shawn Michaels matches, but, like, I mean, during, he was around for so much of this, like, he rarely, did he have any injuries during the time where he was, like, there, so from 2002 to 2010? Like, did he lose much time because of injury? I don't recall.
He had some time off in 09. I'm not sure if it was due to injuries. But I'm not sure how long it was, because remember, he came back for the DX run in 09.
Yeah.
I can answer, but I took a bite of food assuming you'd go on about Sean for a bit. Do you want me to power? Yeah, okay. Sorry, everybody. Sean, I'm just going to spit it out. Wait.
No, don't spit it out, Justin.
It's still good. Sean, when he first came back, 02 to 04, was, even with the back injury, athletically very close to the Sean of his prime. He was just so graceful, so beautiful, so lithe. And then... oh, that's right. People... well, that's another story. You can kind of track his physical state to how more grubby and disheveled his hair gets over that period. It's like, hey, would you like to see a person age in real time, biologically? Watch Shawn Michaels' scalp. Them bangs can only do so much. I think he tore his ACL at the end of 04 and started to slow down athletically. Like, not so many...
He tore his ACL at the end of 04 and he had that match at Mania 05?
He tore his ACL at Taboo Tuesday, or right before Taboo Tuesday, because he was supposed to win the vote and wrestle Triple H, and then he won and wrestled him anyway with no leg.
So Adrian Peterson got nothing on Shawn Michaels, is what
that's
we're
right.
saying.
That's right. And
like
then
full actual ACL tear.
Probably not. I'm using shorthand for like, he blew out his knee, we say in this wrestling.
Knee
this.
Problem.
So he was out for a partially torn MCL, or who knows. I don't know what any of that means, but so that's when he started to slow down, and I think that's when Brace Sean, who did his like old man jog, started to happen. And the fact that they went on for another 6 years having classic matches speaks to his everything. He then tore his knee again in the midst of that John Cena feud. He and Cena never got to have another pay-per-view match after WrestleMania, which they were building towards because Shawn got hurt. And then he came back very early to wrestle Randy Orton at the end of 07. Continue on your trajectory of Shawn Michaels' discussion, Alan.
No, I'm good.
That's... Your question was, did he miss time over that? And he sort of transitions into... a big match wrestler who would take a lot of time off, but that's really, in terms of delivering when you expect him to, close to 100% success rate, that's, I assume there's a certain small little man associated with Shawn Michaels who is going to finish well ahead of him in these lists, and I think
when you said small little man associated with Shawn Michaels, I was just so that's no way to talk about Jesus. Small little man, come on.
Small and little? Not fair.
He was skinny and all, but I mean, fuck. It wasn't like Jesus had a bench press and like protein powder at his disposal.
See, I was thinking of Ric Flair because Hogan used to refer to him as the stupid little man.
And I just meant Sean Waltman.
Yeah. He's my number three.
So, for the list you guys are having, I think you have to award people who were out there doing it every night compared to Shawn Michaels over this run, who picked his spots but picked them amazingly and went all out when to make you know, because part of having a great match is that someone has to remember it, and That's how all of Shawn Michaels' legacy matches can be rattled off. And you're not just saying, oh, remember when Benoit and Matt Hardy had some great TV match on SmackDown versus Mr. Mansoor Senior WrestleMania.
My number five was AJ, I believe I said. So,
AJ, great match with Natalya. Great match with Caitlyn. And I don't know if she'll ever return to work Paige.
I have to imagine she will. She loves it too much not to. For AJ, just all I really have to say is that he was the guy that even... Okay, so the 2002 to 2005, before he was pure TNA only, he was one of my favorite wrestlers. All the stuff he did in Ring of Honor and the stuff he did in TNA was awesome during that period. So just that chunk of time, one of the absolute top tier guys for me. Throughout the TNA only years, really, really wasted, but my God, he still worked so hard and he had so many really good matches during that time period. Whenever I heard there was, even when I just wasn't giving a shit about TNA, if I ever heard there was even a semi-decent AJ match, I'd go out of my way to watch it, and every time I'd be like, God damn, AJ Styles is so good. And now he's left and we're seeing that, and his stuff this year in ROH, I wasn't so big on the first match, but the second Okada match in New Japan, holy shit, he was incredible in that match. His performance, just so good. AJ just kind of touring around wrestling like random dudes, like in random indies. Like every match I've seen pop up online has been really good. I love AJ Styles, and I love his. You mentioned how he would kind of combine like kind of innovative, like creative, athletic stuff with also being super aggressive and hard hitting. And yeah, like what I always loved was AJ against a smaller guy like a Matt Sydal, or there was another person like that he used to wrestle. Pac. He had a match with Pac, and actually Noam Dar as well. He had a match with him in England, where actually it was Scotland. Anyway, sorry. When he'd be wrestling these guys who are kind of outmatched by him physically or experience-wise, he'd really be great at being the aggressor and just really throwing them around and beating the shit out of them. It was always really good. But
awesome.
That's all I have to say about AJ.
And Justin, is there anything you want to add about AJ? I guess you pretty much already talked about him, right?
Yeah, more or less. Yeah. It's hard for anybody in that company to have a legacy.
Yeah, and I...
compare that to how Shawn Michaels' matches are remembered. And granted, people talk about the couple three-ways that he and Joe and Daniels had, but aside from that, there was that night he... who cares? Anyway.
All right,
Matt, do you want me to give my 4 and 3 now, since they kind of... they kind of go together with stuff you talked about earlier.
Okay, sure.
4 and 3 are Ian Rotten representing Chris Hero and CM Punk.
All right, very nice.
Not a huge amount to add about either guy that we haven't talked already.
Well, Hero we haven't talked about.
That's right.
Yeah, so we certainly talked plenty about Punk. Let me just give my number.
I do.
Let me give my number 4 real quick. Is Austin Aries.
Oh, wow.
And, And Justin, who is your number 4 in your WWE list?
Y2 Jericho.
All right, Chris Jericho. So for me, let's talk about Chris Hero. Actually, Alan, you go first.
Again, the tag run encapsulates everything I said about Claudio there. Like, just King's Wrestling was so good at that time. The matches with the Briscoes, even Haas and Benjamin, who otherwise I thought kind of stunk in Ring of Honor. The amazing match with the Machine Guns in New York. Were you with that, Matt?
No. That
was really good. It was the one that was like a double DQ finish, but it was an amazing match before that.
Yeah.
Hero as the young knockout kid in Ring of Honor was great. His stuff in the CZW feud, just he was the best baiting heel you'll ever see in that feud. And then recently, since he left WWE, he's been on a tear. And I think before Ishii just went on fire, I think there was a case to make for Hiro as the most outstanding wrestler of 2014. And yeah, I am a big Chris Hiro fan, always will be. And I think he's deserving of a top five spot.
Yeah, see, I had him at number 14, if you'll recall. And, you know, I mean, it's not that there's really anything negative I have to say about him. It's just that the other guys I put ahead of him. But, you know, he was amazing in so many different ways. First of all, like, silly Chris Hiro in the mid-2000s was amazing, you know, in terms of getting heat, in terms of doing different interesting stuff in his matches. Serious Chris Hiro was amazing in terms of just having, like, these intense, hard-hitting, exciting matches. He was great even before he was in shape. Those matches with Punk I was talking about, I mean, really very good. Like, he's such a student of wrestling. Like, he just absorbs every little
probably
aspect
the biggest.
Of it.
I actually don't know if there's ever been a wrestler in the history of the business who's studied wrestling as much as Chris Hiro. Because obviously, none of them did it pre-1990. You are Mark if you watched other wrestling than your own. And I think it was really only, I suppose like 123 Kid, Sean Waltman, Jerry Lynn were kind of the first kind of guys kind of famously would be kind of studying tapes from around the world in the 90s, and maybe the Hardys a little bit, and Edge of Christian, those kind of guys, but nobody close to the level Hiro. Hiro did, like, he was famous for his videotape collection from stuff from all over the world. Like, Hiro introduced like the British style to the indies in by just showing guys the videotapes and all that stuff. So yeah,
and like, but like that, like it's so evident, you know, in his wrestling, like the way he changes his style so many, the way he adapts. You know, I'm really sad that it couldn't work out with WWE at this point, because I really think he could have been a big star there, and could have had great matches. And him and Cesaro, either as a unit or in a feud, him and Daniel Bryan, it's very frustrating. But and I have nothing bad to say about him. I have nothing really, I mean, to add to what you said, he has so many different periods of his career that were all great. And I think he had the size to be the right kind of guy. You know, the right kind of wrestling star, and have the match and be believable in his matches. He had the crispness in his moves, you know, like he's a guy who didn't seem naturally athletic yet still managed to be very athletic. You know, it's just, he's a rare talent. I know he's going to do a lot of great work on the indies. I hope he gets another shot on the national scene, because I really think it could be something big, like Cesaro, I think, is going to be. Justin, do you really have much to say about Hiro? Have you seen really much of him?
I know you'll be able to tell me this in a heartbeat. When they did that NXT taping where the Kings of Wrestling teamed up against Punk, who did Punk team with?
That was just like after a taping, I think, was it?
Yeah.
Did he team up with Rollins?
I think it might
have
been,
sense.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, just curious.
Yep,
that's it.
All right, Austin Aries. I'm guessing, Alan, he's not on your list.
No honorable mention, but I could have certainly seen a case for him somewhere in the 10-20 range. Seeing him this high is surprising, but I'm all ears.
I just, when I watch Austin Aries, even now, I find him to be so incredibly talented. So crisp, so fast and explosive. Yeah, still. And I'm talking about like now. And, you know, he has had tons of great matches. He had a pretty long run in ROH, like what, a good 5 or 6 years. And, you know, great matches from the moment he showed up there, like all the time. His matches with Danielson, his matches with Nigel, his matches with the Briscoes, his matches. I mean, you know, he had a great match with Kenta. You know, he had a great match with Alex Shelley. He had some good matches with Loki. He had great matches with Samoa Joe. He had, you know, in tag teams, he had great matches. In singles, he had great matches against Roderick Strong. Like, he had some disappointing matches and some actually pretty good, great matches. I just found him to be like, he's a guy to me that's, you know, I go like, as far as guys who were like small,
who are so talented that I think they could overcome it in WWE. You know, Daniel Bryan was always my number one on that list, and Austin Aries was always my number two on that list as far as modern indie guys. Because I just think he has everything. He was eventually able to put together a character and project this like incredible amount of charisma. I don't think his promos were ever as good as they could have been, but that's not really what this list is about. As far as projecting that character in his matches, I think he's great at it. I just think he's just so like he's so athletically perfect in his wrestling that I think the fact that he was able to develop all the other aspects of it make him like one of the elite. And I think I just think his performances have been consistent enough that he does deserve to be this high. He didn't change the way some wrestlers did. Like you don't see like different eras of him like the way you do with a Chris Hero or a Cesaro, you know, or a Chris Jericho. But his consistency during that whole time, I think, has been incredible. You know, it felt like his career was kind of winding down when he went to TNA. And obviously when you go to TNA, it's kind of like, I don't know, it's kind of a banishment in the way people look at you, at least people like among the circles we run in. But he managed to really turn that into something and become a main eventer in TNA when people probably didn't expect that. And he's still really good. And if TNA goes down, he'll be really good somewhere else. And I don't know. I just feel like he's that good. I don't know. What do you think, Alan?
I don't know. He just never. For me, while I definitely saw him as a really good guy and he had loads of great matches, I never really saw him quite at the level of those other elite guys to the point of where the accumulation of his career would put him that high in my mind as we're discussing him here. But yeah, I think I like agree with everything you're saying, but just to a little lesser degree. I agree with everything you said about how he went to TNA and he did really do well for himself there, although I guess he's not really doing much now. I like Aries lots. I thought he was really good in Dragon Gate USA, actually, at a time when I think people were expecting him to not really do too much, and he was awesome there. He had a match with Yamato, which was out of this world, on a WrestleMania weekend. Not really much else to say about him. Did you give your three there, or
I did not give my number three yet.
Okay. Well, shoot.
All right. So your number three is CM Punk. My number three is Chris Jericho.
I know him.
Yes, Justin, who's your number three?
Rey Mysterio.
All right. And remember, Justin's list, WWE only. So, Alan, have you said pretty much all you want to say about CM Punk?
Yeah, I guess, like, we've talked about all the best stuff he's done. There's really nothing I could have added about him that we haven't talked about already.
Justin, anything you want to add about CM Punk?
I think I wanted to agree wholeheartedly with the point you made about if people think it's probably heresy, but the comparison between how Punk succeeds at having great matches and how John Cena succeeds. And I think it really shows in the context of this list that there's more than one way to skin a cat, because if you have a really smart match layout and a great wrestling brain, or you just take advice from someone with a great wrestling brain, you can get far despite your athletic hangups. Punk, in contrast to Kurt Angle, I mean, Kurt Angle, even as his body gets worse and worse, Angle's matches outside of WWE, I just can't forget watching that first TNA Monday Night Impact. I think of that match Angle and AJ Styles had. Crumple, crumple, crumple. Potato chips.
It wasn't me.
All I picture of that match is kicking out of a top rope Angle slam over and over again. And that's probably not what actually happened, but something akin to that. And I never thought I'd be one of those guys who was like, you're doing too much, but knowing what to do and when to do, I think, is the CM Punk story, and maybe not the story of Kurt Angle in his latter days, although there's probably the psychological element that as Kurt Angle's body gets worse and worse, he thinks he needs to make up for that by doing more and more moves with a Z. So yeah, I don't know who you credit with that, whether it's I mean, with Punk, certainly he knows how to have a great match, and John Cena must be a testament to like Arn Anderson, I guess, is his agent. Probably not Dean Malenko, since he laid out Jerry Lawler versus Michael Cole.
All right. Well, as far as Chris Jericho, we've said most of what we were going to say, but I do want to say add but why I have him this high. He even without that, like, even if he had never come back in 07, he probably would have been in like the Benoit Guerrero like reigns that I had on this list. And the fact that he came back and had that amazing run, where he was, maybe the best performer all around in the whole country, and he had like great wrestling match feuds with Michaels and Mysterio, and he's come back a couple other times and had great matches with CM Punk and other people. I don't know, puts him at this elite level where he got to this point where he was just such the consummate pro and could do everything and could be relied upon for everything. And his body of work in the past 12 years does include a large amount of really great matches on top of that. And his character has adapted and changed, and he's been very smart about that and has always tried new things. And he's athletically become very reliable after a period where he was a little bit quote unquote sloppy, before, kind of in like, oh, 2000, 2001. I don't know. He's just a guy that it seems like can do everything and has been able to do everything well for years and years. And he knows when to leave and he knows when to stay. And I don't know. I just think he's really anything a promoter could want. I mean, now at this point, he's getting to the age now where maybe not so much anymore. But up until very recently, like, he's just what you want in a wrestler. Like, other than the height, he's just what you want in a wrestler. And for me, that gets him to number three.
He was a Daniel Bryan, CM Punk-esque figure in his initial run, where I think the crowd just couldn't vocalize it and weren't as dissatisfied with the people in front of him as they were with these guys.
Yeah, oh, definitely.
I also wonder, we don't have time to do it, but it would be interesting to look at your list and see how many of the people who placed and what times they got a nice healthy break from professional wrestling, because it seems to make a difference. If you wonder why CM Punk may have freaked out and said, just forget it, I'm out of here forever, look at the fact that he was it like the candle had burned out in 2011, and then he decided to, instead of taking the break he had mentally prepared for, got right back and decided he needed to be better than he ever had before. And just like the flop sweat of him carrying Kane to these title matches in 2012 and how hard he worked, is it any wonder how like how much you saw him slow down at the end of last year and then finally say enough is enough?
Yeah, no doubt. Now, Alan, I'm pretty sure I know your top two. I just don't know the order.
You don't know nothing, Matt.
Okay.
Okay, you probably know it.
All right. So who's number two?
Rick Steiner. No.
Woof, woof, woof.
My number two is also Sami Zayn.
Aha.
Can I make two a tie? Actually, I have two guys, Sami Zayn and also El Generico, tied at number two.
Sure, absolutely.
That'd be okay?
Absolutely.
Cool.
Yeah. Sami Zayn, El Generico tied at number two. We'll allow it. My number two, Rey Mysterio. And Justin.
My number two is WWF Kurt Angle.
Okay. So Sami Zayn was my number six. He's your number two. I'll go first, saying that there was a comment somebody on the Figure Four board made to Brian Alvarez in like 2006 that he used to joke about, saying that if El Generico,
Jobs.
yes, exactly, Jobs, yeah, if El Generico was on a card, he was going to have the best match on that card, and I'll be damned if that's not almost always true 8 years later. If Sami Zayn is going to be on a card, if El Generico was on a card, he was probably going to have the best match on the card, and the fact that he was able to be that over as a character, without doing promos, without showing his face for that many years, it's pretty remarkable. And I mean, as far as masked wrestlers, he probably was among the best at showing emotion through the mask, especially given how plain the mask often was. he was obviously athletically amazing. You know, great grace, great timing. You know, timing especially, I'd say. Psychologically amazing, great at selling. I will say I have not seen many matches where he's worked heel. He's kind of been in the heel role when he was teaming with Kevin Steen at times, but I've never really seen him actually work as a heel. Have you seen him work as a heel, Alan?
Not as a heel, but he was kind of the aggressor, sort of the kind of like a bit of a dick in during the match against Ricochet in PWG, where basically like they kind of had the story of like the crowd started. It was Ricochet had just kind of come into PWG. And Generico had like been their beloved guy, and then in this match, the crowd just really got behind Ricochet. And instead of chanting "Ole, ole, ole," they were chanting "O'Shea, O'Shea, O'Shea." Uh-huh. And then Generico just punched Ricochet right in the face and just flattened him. And then just kind of looked to all the crowd, just kind of like, "Fuckers, turn on me quickly." And then he just had this amazing match where he just kind of based for Ricochet and made him look good and. Yeah, and then it was kind of cool because, like, a year later, Ricochet was well-established in PWG, and Generico was, he didn't, like, turn heel from that or anything. He stayed sort of beloved, but had this match a year later, and Ricochet had kind of become real cocky and had the swagger at this point. He'd been over to Japan, and Ricochet was almost the bully in that one, and the crowd all got behind Generico. Like, he was kind of the sort of the old-timer veteran that they were like looking to shut up the young punk, but yeah, he was phenomenal, just kind of working as more the aggressive style, which he kind of worked the same kind of match that he would do with Pac, but with more kind of with Pac, there was never really any kind of like he was never really kind of like dickish to him during the match. It was just more he was basing for all the moves. He was playing the guy who was making the other guy, the smaller flyer, look good, and he's well capable of doing that.
Yeah, I mean, if there's ever like, if you have to pick a weakness for a guy, the fact that he never really has worked heel much is maybe the one something you could stretch to put out. But he was like the ultimate babyface in the ring. Comeback, selling, everything, perfect. Had great wrestling matches. Had great spot fests. Incredible brawls. You know, I was live for that blow off match with him and Steen at Final Battle. Incredible. I don't know what you thought of it, but I loved
every match they've ever had with each other.
Yeah, that one to me is a 5-star match. And the fact that he's doing so well with, you know, kind of doing a new thing in NXT, you know, that he's not El Generico anymore. Like pretty much all the comedy is stripped away from the character. He's a serious kind of like cool dude in a hat who, you know, who's kind of gets to
kind of gimmick.
Yeah. Kind of gets to be himself now.
Remember,
imagine that day he goes into a meeting and like, all right, my future, they're going to tell me what I'm going to be doing. Like they hand him this passes envelope over the table and he opens it up slowly. And it's like, you will be a cool dude in a hat.
Yeah.
Remember when Mr. Perfect and the Red Rooster got their envelopes mixed up?
Yeah.
Remember all the angst when he first signed about how, oh my God, WWE's going to take his mask off and I'm going to kill myself. And then all the angst when they did. And what a problem that ended up being.
Well, he's been able to do everything he would have been able to do with the mask, without the mask. And
yeah, he's the same guy.
Like, yeah,
it's
but
the same thing.
He seems much more suave now because of how he dresses in that damn hat,
and how he flirts with Renee.
Yeah, exactly, and like the fact that he speaks another language. Who knew? And it's not Spanish, cool. And it's, you know, so makes him so cool. So yeah. What do you want to say? What do you want to add about him?
I got nothing. Everything we've said and. God, everything I've said a million times about the guy, it's just that El Generico run from what I guess 04, same time as Steen, so 04, 05, when initially it was the kind of crazy car crash style matches. But then I think Generico really kind of in PWG, he really started to become the guy in like 2007 and exploded from there at the same time as he was doing in Ring of Honor. And Yeah, everywhere he goes, everywhere in the world he goes, be it Europe, be it Japan, America, he gets the same reactions, and it doesn't matter the makeup of the crowd, if it's kids, old people, smart marks, hardcore fans, casual fans, like, it doesn't matter. Every crowd will react to him after 20 seconds of him being out there. It's, yeah, he knows what to do. He's just pro wrestling genius.
Agreed. Speaking of pro wrestling geniuses, my number two was Rey Mysterio.
Mark Madden here again. His good nickname is the Super Genius, something Alan doesn't know. Continue.
My number two was Rey Mysterio. And when you think about Rey Mysterio in this time period, this was a guy whose knees were completely shot before this. And his whole style was based on high flying. And he comes into WWE in the middle of 2002. And really a total question mark. I mean, shorter, much shorter than anyone WWE has ever considered pushing. How tall is Rey Mysterio? 5'3"?
About that, yeah.
And the guy, like, he changes his style just enough to fit into WWE while still maintaining, like, this, like, high-flying explosiveness. He adds a whole bunch of psychology. He gets to the point where he becomes considered a legitimate main eventer in WWE. He has great matches the whole time. His body really gets worse and worse off the whole time. But really up until maybe 2010, 2011, he was able to consistently have these really good matches, be believable against bigger guys in something that really shouldn't even happen. Like all the strengths that Eddie Guerrero had, I feel like he almost inherited. And was able to incorporate into his style as he was able to do a little bit less physically. And I don't know. I just think that he's been able to
listen to him on the Jericho podcast talking about some of that stuff recently.
Oh, I downloaded it, but I haven't listened to it yet.
It's really good. I definitely recommend it. He comes off so likable as well. It's just, he's the nicest guy.
Yeah. And he's another guy that really, I mean, he worked heel a little bit in WCW, but he really can't be a heel. And, like, you know, that's why I think why people were so frustrated when he was booed at – or when they booed his entrance at the Royal Rumble.
Yeah, Justin, fuck you.
Yeah, I mean, I still insist. You know, people are like, no, they were booing Rey Mysterio. No, they were booing the fact that he wasn't Daniel Bryan. And
they tried to put Rey Mysterio out there to mitigate that, which was not a good idea.
Right, right, exactly. And, you know, like – but, like, barring that, you know, that weird Chicago crowd at WrestleMania 22 – it's hard not to like Rey Mysterio. It's hard not to get behind him in his matches. And, you know, he as a promo, he never got particularly good, but he got better. But his character certainly became fleshed out. But I don't know. I just feel like psychologically he was among the best. I think sometimes even like the matches that people don't celebrate as much, like his matches with Chavo Guerrero, if you actually
Drew McIntyre.
Yeah, if you watch them psychologically, like they're super sound. And he really knows what he's doing. And I think that I'd put him in the category of wrestling genius too. And maybe I wouldn't have done that, you know, in 2001 or even 2002. But I definitely do it now. I mean, he was part of that SmackDown 6 crew too. And that early run of his, he was having incredible matches like all the time. That short opener against Kurt Angle at SummerSlam 02, unforgettable. He had great matches. He was one of the, like, you know, Dolph Ziggler really didn't come into his own until maybe 2010, 2011.
Oh, those Dolph Ray matches were so good.
Yeah, but he wasn't having great matches with Ray, you know, even before that. You know, like, probably put him on the map.
SummerSlam 09.
Yeah, I'd say put Dolph on the map. You know, Ray's put over a lot of guys and made a lot of guys look good. And I don't know. I think, you know, I think he's been the WWE's best worker this whole time. If you're talking about consistency and, you know, like the depth of what he can do, I think until that recent period where he really can't really fully come back from, I think he was the best all around guy they've had.
Yeah. When Justin, this show was actually an idea formed a good while ago. And when Justin,
it was Matt's pitch and I was too lazy to do it, just for the record.
When Justin mentioned it to me and I was thinking about it, it was initially going to be the 10-year period of 2002 to 2012. And when it was that, I had Ray a lot higher. But it was just the fact that in the last 2 years, he's done like very little. And like a guy like Sami Zayn has done so much and Daniel Bryan has done so much. Of course, Daniel Bryan doesn't make my list, unfortunately.
It's competitive.
So, yeah, it's Ray during the years he was around. I think the only period I wasn't super into Ray was sort of 06, 07, when he got the title reign, and it was kind of like he was booked so terribly.
Yeah.
And 07, he was gone for a while, and then I remember he came back and he wrestled SummerSlam 07. He came back and he had put on a lot of weight, and it seemed like this isn't so good. But and he had a feud with Kane that was really bad. But once that was out of the way, we got the old Ray back very quickly. The old Ray was amazing.
Justin, anything you want to add about Ray?
Funnily enough, you said what I was going to say almost word for word, Matt. We talked about Benoit and Eddie and this different phase of their careers. Even more than them, I would say this WWE Ray Mysterio is like Ray 2.0. He was WWE-ized, I guess, to do these signature spots, and he just became this like pure babyface instead of a daredevil man who was wrestling people close to his size and doing high spot matches. He was just selling underdog who worked in his moves the way they should, and sure enough, like his signature moves became incredibly over. I'll tell you the hilarious thing about Rey Mysterio, and this is really funny, is that he worked so hard and did so many unprecedented things, both athletically and in terms of like success breaking barriers down, and worked through so many injuries, and was so underappreciated by his employers, bordering on abuse at times, that he gets injured a lot. And that's really funny.
Yeah, I mean, funny is a word for it.
Shall we move to number one?
I will say, yeah. It's when people wonder why Ray tailed off over the last few years, WWE broke Ray for good when they had him stay to do that match with Alberto Del Rio when he'd already hurt his leg, and they wanted to keep him to wrestle Del Rio in a title match in San Diego, so he put off surgery, got hurt even worse, and that was pretty much the end of the Ray era.
Yep. All right, for now.
It's been, and you can, speaking of Sean's hairline, you can track Ray's body over time as he starts doing a springboard Rana, and then I think it just becomes a springboard splash, and now he's not even allowed to springboard anymore and just does a top rope splat.
Yeah, he talked about that on that podcast. It was interesting.
He's had a very interesting career, but, and we could do a whole show on it, but I think we probably got to get to number one. Now, I'm going to guess that we might have all the same number one.
Can I just do something here that I haven't done with any of the other people on the list?
Sure.
And it's pretty much because I think everyone really, I don't know what I can say about number one that I haven't said a million times, but people just don't know. It's I don't know what I can say that isn't obvious. So I prepared something, not a poem.
A song.
I've prepared a list within a list. And I haven't done this for anyone else on the list. And quite frankly, I don't think you can do this for anyone else on the list. So, I have this list. The list is 2002, Low Key. 2003, AJ Styles. 2004, Samoa Joe. 2005, Roderick Strong. 2006, Kenta. 2007, Takeshi Morishima. 2008, Nigel McGuinness. 2009, Seth Rollins. 2010, Shingo Takagi. 2011, The Big Show. 2012, Sheamus. 2013, John Cena. 2014, Bray Wyatt. That is a list of a match every year that an individual who we have at number one partook in that was a match that I would just say was really, really great, and in many of those cases, a match of the year candidate or the match of the year. No one else we've talked about today can lay claim to a list from 2002 to 2014 with as good as those each of those years. No one was doing that every year. So that person is, of course, Daniel Bryan. To clarify just a few points, 2005 Roderick Strong match was not the more famous one they had in Chicago, which is 2006. It was the one they had towards the end of 2005 where they were spitting on each other and all got all heated and angry. Well, I really like that match.
They had two great matches in 2005. One was in Connecticut with the spitting. One was in Chicago the next week, which I think was actually considered the best of that whole triad of matches. But,
oh, yeah. Sorry. Yeah, that, I was thinking of that one as 06. But yeah, no. So either way, 2005, he had a great match with Roderick.
Yeah.
And the 2008 Nigel match, maybe not as famous as the 2006 and 2007 Nigel matches, but I would say just as good.
Yeah. I mean, listen, I mean, all those matches you listed, the only one that I might have some compunction on is the Big Show one. But
I thought, yeah, that, well, there was one match with Big Show. I think it was – I can't remember if it was TV or pay-per-view, but I just know there – I was trying to think for that year, and admittedly that was the toughest year to think of. Yeah. But
Money in the Bank, you can count that.
True, true. But yeah, I thought he wrestled – a really smart match against Big Show and Big Show too. I thought that was a really, really good bet.
But every one of the, and pretty much every one of those years, he had another match you could have listed instead of the match you listed. As
oh yeah,
equal. I mean, he's had. I mean, this year Triple H, you know, 2006 McGuinness, or you know, like I mean, 2007 McGuinness. I'm just saying, like, incredible matches. 2005 against Jamie Noble or Daniel Bryan was considered one of the best wrestlers in the world when he was like 20. I think that was 2002, 20, 21 years old. And he was having great matches that whole time. Really developed as a character, as a personality in the ring and outside of the ring. Changed his style all the time. You know, whether from super technical to kind of like MMA based, to a more brawling style, to a more high-flying style. Now it's sort of like the kind of plucky underdog, you know, but, you know, pattern style that he has in WWE. Awesome at all of it. Could have a great match with anyone. Always does have a good match. Never has a bad match. Considering all the injuries he's had, has been, you know, very consistently around that whole time. Yeah, it's. I mean, like you said, it's almost redundant to even bother talking about why Daniel Bryan is so great. He's the best at almost every aspect of it. At any given time, there might be a guy on the scene who's better than him, but they come and go. They go up and down, and he stays around and he stays great. And when you think he's losing it a little bit, he comes back and is great. The one thing I will say about him. He has yet to have a match in WWE, in my opinion, that's as good as his best matches but from before WWE. And I think, you know, he'll eventually get there. But, you know, I'm still waiting for it.
That's a pretty high standard.
I don't know how
many matches have we ever seen in WWE that are as good as, say, Danielson versus Kenta from 2006?
No, you're right, but they happen. And I think he's one of the guys that's going to make it happen. I think just needs the right time, the right opponent, the right finish. I think him and Cesaro could do it. I think him and Lesnar could do it. I even think him and Cena could do it. I think they came close.
They almost did.
Yeah, they I'd say that's his best WWE match, in my opinion. I know he had some great matches with Sheamus and with Punk. The Cena match is still my favorite WWE match of his. I think a rematch could be even better, especially if they have the right buildup. Sorry, Justin, go ahead.
I interrupted you, but that first Punk Bryan match, I thought was going to be the start of like a Renaissance 2 or 3 show program because they worked this brilliant match, but then they just did a quick roll up finish and didn't really do any of their big moves, saving those for down the line. And then the down the line never came because they went into a 3-way with Kane. And then they did like a hardcore match with AJ as the referee after that. So that I think was his closest chance to have a real, a classic above classics, if that's the standard you're holding him to.
It is amazing. Like, and I know, no disrespect to Kane. He works hard. He's talented. But like, it's amazing how much they can throw him into anything to kind of ruin it. I feel bad saying that, but it's true. But yeah, no,
it will be great when he retires. No offense to Kane, but it will be great when he retires.
I mean, it'll be probably good for him.
Now, notwithstanding, Daniel Bryan does owe a little something to Kane because if they hadn't been convinced yet, him making the hugging and the team with Kane into like one of the signature acts on the TV show just added to whatever accident allowed him to start getting the push he did last year.
And Alan, I will say, I really do appreciate that dramatic flourish you gave by giving that list to introduce Daniel Bryan, who was, for the record, my number one also. And Justin, was it your number one?
I have a surprise ending. My number two is Kurt Angle. After all. Yeah, that's right. And then my number one.
Stand back. There's a hurricane coming through.
No, not really. Okay. Number one was Sean, and then number zero was Bryan Danielson, because I just couldn't separate him. Like, by WWE rights, he should not be number one, but I knew he was going to win and should win, so I just made him number zero.
Fair enough. Alan, do you have anything else you want to say about Daniel Bryan?
I'll be honest, Matt, I'm spent.
All right. So just one more time, Alan, if you can, recap your top 20.
I can. Number 20, Brock Lesnar. 19, Alex Shelley. 18, Seth Rollins. 17, The Young Bucks. 16, The Briscoes. 15, Kevin Steen. 14, John Cena. 13, Kurt Angle.
John Cena!
12, Eddie. Justin, do it.
Eddie Guerrero?
Yeah, Guerrero? Roll those doors, like, you know, I can't.
Viva la raza.
Viva la savings. Sorry.
11, Edge. 10, Smojo. 9, Chris Jericho.
The rated R. Go ahead.
8, Shawn Michaels. 7, Cesaro. 6, you may have heard me stutter earlier. I had an AJ Ray bit of confusion between my spacings here. And did I put AJ first or Ray first? I think I put
You put Ray first.
Ray at six. Ray at six. 5, AJ. 4, Hero. 3, Punk. 2, Generico. 1, Bryan.
And my top 20, 20, Seth Rollins. 19, Cesaro. 18, AJ Styles. 17, John Cena. 16, Eddie Guerrero. 15, Chris Benoit. 14, Chris Hero. 13, Kevin Steen. 12, Edge. 11, Nigel McGuinness. 10, Low Key. 9, CM Punk. 8, Samoa Joe. 7, Kurt Angle. 6, Sami Zayn. 5, Shawn Michaels. 4, Austin Aries. 3, Chris Jericho. 2, Rey Mysterio. And 1, Daniel Bryan. Gentlemen, this was a blast.
It was a learning experience as we listed them.
I want to thank you guys so much for doing this, committing so much time. It's incredible. I hope everyone enjoyed listening. Does anyone have any final thoughts? I'll go one at a time. Justin?
So many, but no.
All right. Anything you want to plug?
Bob Dylan, Shadows in the Night, August 26th. And thanks, as always, to good friends over at ESPN.com who redefine the way that sports are covered on the internet. They've got all the scores, all the highlights, even some video footage, player stats. Hey, who won that game last night? I'll just go to ESPN.com.
And coming soon, Renee Young.
God, no.
Or I guess she'll be Renee Paquette again, then. Or maybe Renee Ambrose.
Ooh.
Or Renee Moxley. Or Renee Good.
Renee Good. Renee Good, Eugene. I don't know.
I just have to plug Alan Forel on Twitter and WrestlingObserver.com and F4WOnline.com and the DKP show on that site, which goes by two URLs.
All right. And yes.
Oh, and Fighting Spirit Magazine, of course. And if you... do get Fighting Spirit Magazine and you enjoyed this discussion, you may enjoy issue 100, which you'd be able to get on the app and all that, where we, as I mentioned earlier, discussed or ranked the top 100 wrestlers worldwide from 06 to modern day.
I do have a...
Go ahead, Justin.
I'm looking at my list and if you would have told people in even 04, 05 how far Kurt Angle's rep would have fallen since then, they would not have believed in you. Believe in you? Believed you.
I believe in you, Justin. I think that's true. I also think if you said, but he spent that whole time in TNA, they might have been like, oh, okay. That makes sense.
Like, you'd think he's a what if, like, oh, what if Kurt Angle had been in WWE this time? But there is no what if, because the reason he was so good is why his body broke down and he went crazy.
And on that note,
have a nice evening.
Yeah, yeah. The next episode is going to be non-wrestling, and that's going to be in about a month. But we will have
that rules me out.
Yes, but we will have Alan and/or Justin back on in a few months for more wrestling-related lists through which we learn. Until then, yeah. Try reading a damn book if you want to learn something. And without further ado, thank you and good night.
Bye.